never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 54th Skanon podcast. I'm back. Much like the Terminator, which is out next week.
Who let you in?
Am I not welcome?
You're always welcome. Good to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, so we're sans Jay today because he couldn't be bothered. But we still have Darren.
But luckily we have a substitute.
Yes. So we stay with three. And much like Jurassic World, it's an all-blokes affair here. But we're nowhere near as sexist.
No, this is true. But we'll talk about that later because I have a lot to say.
Yes.
Will we get to it before Entourage? That is the question.
It's in the top 10.
So, spoiler.
spoiler.
The biggest movie of all time is in the top 10.
The third biggest movie of all time.
Oh, international. Oh, okay. Well, biggest opening international.
Yeah, so it's still, it won't get anywhere near Titanic.
You're talking about it already and you're making me mad. God, this film.
Were you a dinosaur afterwards?
Oh.
This is all Darren does.
I don't really have film commentary.
I have been editing it, so I am aware of what we've been doing. So, anywho, we'll start, as per usual, with what we've been watching recently. So, Darren.
I watched the entire Nolan Batman trilogy because it was the 10th anniversary of the release of Batman Begins this week.
Ooh.
Great fun. I think they hold up very well, actually, I have to say. Probably, yes, the best superhero films, probably the best blockbuster trilogy in quite a while. I'm trying to think back. The only comparable thing I can think of is Indiana Jones, maybe?
Until they're,
Trilogy.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at the trilogy.
Yeah, we'll leave it at the trilogy. There never was a fourth Indiana Jones.
Back to the Future.
But, maybe.
I enjoy them, very much so.
I do, but I'm not a big fan of the third Back to the Future.
Where do you stand in Dark Knight Rises?
I really, really like it.
Thank you, because now if you were Jay, you'd have been down on it and poo-pooed the trilogy as a result.
Oh, I feel like I'm letting the side down here.
No, you're in my good books with this.
Well, what really gets me about the criticism of The Dark Knight Rises, and I don't think it's Jay's criticism, but when it comes up inevitably, the criticism of The Dark Knight Rises are all these nitpicks and sort of like alleged plot holes.
Yeah.
How does Batman get from one side of the world to the other in like 6 days? Which, isn't really a plot hole, given, the first film in the trilogy spends half an hour explaining how that happens, But, I think it holds up very well. I was actually surprised on rewatch at, Nolan has a reputation for being a very dry filmmaker, for being sort of humorous and incredibly serious. But there are parts of that trilogy I find hilarious. And it's not in terms of, it's not mugging to the camera humor.
No, it's quite... When I think back on it, it can be quite funny. Batman Begins, I think, especially.
Batman Begins, and also, Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, because the first thing I think of when I think of Heath Ledger
is laughter.
Oh, he's hilarious, isn't he?
Oh, come on, let's not blow things out of proportion here. No?
Yeah, so some of it is very, very
or
clever.
I'm only burning my half, or anything like that.
It's wry, I love
it. It is, it's very wry, and also, having watched it again, I just love that. Yeah, Cillian Murphy is an absolutely terrible supervillain.
But he works in this context because he's supposed to be a terrible
supervillain. I love that there's
he's a villain, but he's not super.
That there's a recurring motif in the trilogy about how crap Jonathan Crane is as a supervillain. You sell drugs that lobotomize your customers. There's a business plan for you. You menace the woman you know is carrying a taser and get shot in the face, and then you disappear from the third film after Gary Oldman has none of your crap. But yeah, so that, and I also watched Godfather 2 because I didn't have time for two entire cinematic trilogies over the weekend.
And you just can't bother watching the third one, can you?
Yeah, I mean, there never was a third one. I like to pretend that Michael sort of died immediately after the credits rolled on the second one.
But just when you think you're out,
they pull
you back in.
But no, I love the second one. I actually think it's one of the rare cases where the truism that the book is better than the film, very much not the case with The Godfather.
I've never read the book, but this is certainly what I've heard. But it can't, because it's The Godfather.
It is. It's amazing. The book is pure pulpy trash. And I mean that in an affectionate Mario Puzo sort of, it's enjoyable trash, but it's not like, you look at the films, will end up on pretty much anybody's top 10, top 20 list.
Jurassic Park is also better than the book.
Yeah, Jurassic Park is a lot better than the book.
Jaws is better than the book as well.
Yes, yes.
Oh, and to tie your two trains of thought there together, Nolan directed one of those films that improved on the book, The Prestige.
Ah, I haven't read The Prestige.
It's rather clumsily structured, but
I would argue that The Prestige is possibly Nolan's best film, but that's probably a controversial opinion.
No, there's quite a few people out there who would agree.
No,
I wouldn't.
No, we don't, because we have Memento there. But
yeah, Memento is like one of my favorites of all time. So no going to watch it with me.
Okay.
But fair enough, because I can understand that opinion. There's a lot to love in The Prestige.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much a gigantic love letter to cinema. Which is great. And I find it really weird that Nolan's described as this sort of very dry, disconnected individual, when, like, all of his films have these incredible emotional sort of through lines to them. Like, the problem with Interstellar, for example, is not that it's detached, non-emotional.
It's that there's maybe too much of that.
Yeah, it proposes that love is a galactic force on the level of gravity and time.
Still prefer Interstellar to gravity.
Yes.
And time.
But yeah, so that's me.
Very good.
You guys?
Me, sad to say, I've only had one thing that I can talk about at this particular juncture, because... Actually, no, I take that back. I have two things I can talk about, but a strange thing for me, this weekend, I watched all new releases. And the two I'm going to talk about are the ones that are not in the top ten. Oh, God, I'm not looking forward to that. But anyway, first of all, Black Coal Thin Ice, the Chinese drama / thriller I was telling you about last week. It's good.
Wow.
Wow, yeah, there we go.
Okay, let me be more.
Yeah. To the point there, Philip.
I do my best. It's a fascinating little watch. Looks great. Stunning direction. Great performances. Plot is a bit more conventional than it thinks. And it tries to cover that up with, you know, all the twists in China. But no dice. Still, an interesting watch, because it is just that well made. Looks great. And I don't think there's enough to make it stand out enough that it earned the Golden Bear at Berlin. But there you go. It's just the way it goes.
So good, but not that good.
Pretty much.
Okay.
I didn't put in the not that good bit at the beginning, just to, you know, for the sake of a
suspense.
A
suspense. Yeah, suspense.
All right, sorry.
There's your twist. Yeah, good. Dot, dot, dot.
Now, I can say a bit more, perhaps, about The Look of Silence. Now, as all you regular listeners will remember from last week, Jay was really looking forward to this.
In fact, that's probably the reason why Jay is not here. He's very disappointed in you all. He was banking on this to be number one.
Oh, he was planning to kill.
Yeah. This,
he understands how the dynamic of box office works, because if he doesn't, I'll give him an hour-long lecture on it.
Only an hour. You've trimmed that down.
I have, yes. Yeah.
But Look of Silence, as a follow-up to The Act of Killing, it's as painful and as beautiful as you'd imagine. As good as... debatable. But it's a human face on a kind of tragedy where the amount of people that are involved and actually were killed could be easily reduced to statistics. But to watch people who have suffered not only the indignities of genocide and then afterwards have had to go on and try and lead the rest of their lives and age, it is deeply, deeply sad.
Would you say that it actually, that the relationship between the two films is complementary?
Oh, very much so. I mean, they reflect one another, but quite crucially, you can watch them separately. The Look of Silence doesn't need you to see The Act of Killing.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance to see either, please do.
Or both.
Preferably both.
Possibly not as a double bill.
No. You're going to need a stiff drink or a 10 after
that.
That's
not going to do you any good.
There's an upper.
But that doesn't change the fact that it's still a wonderful film. And the simplicity of it as well. Just taking one man's point of view, an optician, and the driving narrative of it is that he goes to people who were involved in this genocide in Indonesia in the mid-60s, these communist purges. And he talks to both people who were victims of it and people who perpetrated it. And he goes to each of them on the pretense of actually checking their eyesight. And, of course, therein is the crux of the matter. He's bringing clear vision to harrowing events.
Is
that
it
people
not
would
the
die
Trevor McDonald's Vision Express ad?
I should have gone to Specsavers.
Oh, dear.
No, have you seen that, the Trevor McDonald Vision Express ad?
No.
Basically, the Vision Express ad has...
Off the point,
no,
but
no,
go
it's,
on.
It's
also a masterpiece.
It's what it does is it's got this... it's got Trevor McDonald in it.
I figured.
Yeah, and he is saying of all the things that he's seen throughout the years and the fall of the Berlin Wall and apartheid and all that sort of stuff, right, the fall of apartheid and these different things. So it basically chronicles all of the massive world-changing events that he has. And the only reason that he's been able to see him is because he had a pair of glasses from Vision Express. It
That's disgusting.
Yeah, no, it's horrid. Yeah.
It's almost as cynical as those is it Parkinson ads where he tries to sell...
He tries to sell walking paths or life insurance or something like that.
Life insurance.
Is that right? Yes. Oh, well, here, well, family.
Be afraid for your relatives. You don't want to leave them penniless.
No, but while you're thinking about it, here's Michael Bublé.
Yes. Very, very
cynical.
It's
my terrible Michael Parkinson, and I apologise.
But very, very cynical.
I'm guessing that Trevor McDonald ad is as cynical as The Look of Silence isn't.
Yes.
Good.
Nice dovetail back. Mm-hmm. Nice sort of dovetail.
Well, I was on it. I was on this topic, and I'm determined to come back to it. Anyway, Niall. Now, this is going to be interesting, because you've been away a while.
I've been away a while now. In fairness to me, I've had a child in the meantime, so...
How is little Andrew?
He is quite well, yes.
Good.
Yeah, keeping us up all mad hours, but you know, most of the time he sleeps, so it's good. Good.
Have you got him his first Indiana Jones outfit yet?
No, but he has a Han Solo one.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Let me guess, you're going to put on furs and be Chewbacca.
No, I am not going to be Chewbacca. I might.
You're tall enough.
I might do C-3PO.
I can't wait to hear that impression. Featuring the vacuum cleaner as R2-D2.
But mostly, you know, I've been while I've been at home, I've been working on changes to the website, changes to the Irish. I launched the Irish Film Database while I was away as well. Ooh. And other stuff. So.
I like that you actually do more work while you're like off having a child
than
anybody in this podcast does like actually work.
This child has done more for knowledge of Irish film than anyone before him.
Well, it so happened that I was at home for 2 weeks in a row and
he was bored.
Created a record of all Irish film just because I got bored one afternoon.
He was asleep most of the time. So anyway, so what I've been watching is primarily TV rather than films. But I have rewatched some stuff. I rewatched Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Again,
yes.
How many times now?
Well, that's 8 or 9.
Oh dear God!
It improves a great deal on the first one.
The first one. It's
really?
Got that old school Rocketeer type charm.
Well, because it's directed by Joe Johnston.
And it has a plot that it can't wait to race through. And then the second act, they realise, oh crap, we've got nothing left.
But it's also got Nazis that aren't Nazis because you need to sell it in Germany. Which really, that bugs
How
me.
How big is the German market?
Quite big, but...
I know there are 80 million people plus there,
but
there is a limit.
But to go and see a movie called Captain America, where he beats up Germans who most definitely were not Nazis during the Second World War.
Yeah, but I think the Germans are aware that Nazis existed. I think that's a crucial thing. The Germans know that these lads were there.
Yeah, I like how you say that. You're pitching as if all Germans are there. Yeah, he knows about Nazis. Yes, we've heard it before. Gets to the point.
Oliver Hitchcock is making another film about set in World War II about Nazis. So
which makes sense, as opposed to another World War II film set in Europe during World War II, which features people who are eviler than Nazis.
Yeah.
Like
the Russians.
Well, the Red Skulls. Yeah, the Red Skulls' big scene in the first Captain America. Well, one of his big scenes is where he proves he's more evil than the two Nazis who have been sent to like audit him.
We're doing an evil audit. Are you evil enough?
The only thing more evil than Hydra is Scientology.
Captain America 3.
Captain America versus Scientology.
Yep.
In the final act, it's him and Elrond
going clear to the Captain America story. So
I'm holding out for a Tom Cruise cameo.
I was thinking Will Smith would have made a great Captain America, if only for this.
Why I bring up Scientology is I watch Going Clear.
Oh!
While I was off. Yeah, so,
I still haven't seen this. I really must.
Yeah, so it's... it's quite a well-constructed documentary. It is very much against the Church of Scientology, but I don't see how you could balance it, because some of the stuff that they believe in is quite strange.
That episode of South Park is correct, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, South Park is parody to an extreme. This is more balanced. But
more to the point, Battlefield Earth is relatively accurate, right?
Battlefield Earth, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just so we have a benchmark.
Oh, dear.
You have to watch it and you're just going, I know, they can't believe this. They can't. But then, you know... Which one,
Going Clear or Battlefield Earth?
No, Going Clear. Nobody has to watch Battlefield Earth.
I've watched it. It is one of the ugliest films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I've watched Gummo. Yeah.
Is it the worst film John Travolta has ever made? There's a question.
I know there are some contenders, but it has to be.
Okay. Not Look Who's Talking, like, 4.
There are only 3 of those. Don't even start. Kirstie Alley will be listening in. She'll want a 4th because she's got nothing.
Well, I think it's calling for a reboot.
And so the other film that I watched, because look, I recommend watching that. It's a great documentary. I mean, and Paul Haggis is very interesting in it, more so than any of his films.
Controversial.
Not really. I think maybe
somebody never got over Brokeback Mountain.
Is the only one. Is the only one that I think people still have any time for.
Right.
Yeah,
probably. I'm going to throw this out there. Crash 1 because it was the better film.
No, Crash 1 because it had, oh look, we're dealing with race now. The gays will have their turn in a few years, but now it's race this year.
I believe Brokeback Mountain to be the better of the two films, but I'm not going to go to war for either of them to win an Oscar.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Anywho, the other film that I watched was Pitch Perfect 2.
Ah.
So Pitch Perfect 2 is...
It's okay.
It's grand. It's nowhere near as memorable as the first one. The songs are nowhere near as good as the first one. And it's but Hayley Steinfeld is very good. So.
And Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
Well, and Rebel Wilson.
Yeah, but I'm saying of the new additions.
Yeah. Of the new additions, yeah. Yes.
So and the Germans are amazing. Yes, even though one of them's Danish.
do you know what I've discovered? She's inspired a lot of lady love. There's a few, at least a couple of women I know who suddenly find themselves weirdly attracted to her, just like Anna Kendrick was.
Yeah, well, she's
just throwing that out there.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's
Birgitta Hjort Sørensen. She is a lovely looking lady.
She's a powerful woman, in it. You know, she's a powerful physical presence, you know. So she's got the kind of Grace Jones type thing going on, you know. So in it,
wow, just, there's a comparison I didn't expect.
Well, I'm saying the Grace Jones from like Live and Let Die.
Without
the
overacting.
A Few to a Kill, sorry, yeah.
That was a great power couple. Christopher Walken and Grace Jones.
Oh, no, the problem...
That's terrifying what you think about it.
Yeah.
No, the problems with that film are all on Roger Moore.
None of them have anything to do with like the casting of the villains.
No. Roger Moore and your one, the screaming girl.
Who's young enough to be like his granddaughter.
Yeah.
But anyway, Pitch
Perfect 2, yeah, it's fine. I enjoyed it.
I
thought it was nice enough, but it's no Mad Max Fury Road. Let's put that anyway.
And just to link back to your TV watching, Birgitta Hjort Sørensen is, of course, one of the stars of Borgen, which is now readily available on DVD, and just please go watch it. It's fantastic.
I can't disagree with that. So we'll move on into the movie news.
It's nice not having to fill this role. I've grown in my appreciation of what you actually do between all your film websites, editing, and whatever else. You know, being a father, having a day job.
Yeah, it's almost like I don't sleep.
I wonder why.
While we're online, while we've been doing this, Niall's actually launched another website.
While we've been doing this, I've actually been editing multiple pages on the website.
Yep. And hell, if we give him another 6 weeks, he'd probably have taken over the world.
Because I launched a redesign earlier today.
So go visit the website, scanon.com, to see our snazzy new redesign.
Yes.
It's really nice. It's very patriotic.
And let us know what you think.
So, we're going on to the movie news. So, we'll start off with news from today. So, The Lighthouse have come up with a new season. So this one is films that you'd love your kids to see. So basically it's all films from the 80s.
You do control everything. Coincidence?
Yeah.
I think not.
There we go, yeah. So it's got a fabulous selection of a lot of my childhood favourites anyway. So it starts with E.T., Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, then Labyrinth and Dark Crystal as a double bill. Never-ending story.
I'm sorry, but I do not want my kids seeing Labyrinth. I mean, David Bowie...
Dance the Magic Dance!
I'm sorry, but Bowie in that getup.
You can see that everything.
That codpiece. It's terrifying.
You can see everything.
I saw Labyrinth as a kid. And, yeah.
And your love of Jennifer Connelly has never died.
My love of Jennifer... Exactly. My love of Jennifer Connelly endures to today. But yeah, the next one that's on the list is the only film that has ever given me waking nightmares. It is The Never-Ending Story.
The horse, the swamp.
That's cruel. It's really scary.
I watched it as maybe a 6-year-old, and we saw it in school or with a school trip, and as a result, I ended up having proper full on nightmares, and my parents banned me from ever watching the sequels.
They did very well. I'm about to say, if you want a real nightmare, just watch Neverending Story 2.
And if you want to never sleep again. Part 3.
So, yeah, no.
Purely for artistic reasons, man.
I've never revisited it, so I don't know if I should.
I think you should, with the little Andy in tow.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I'm not doing that to him. Plus, the Falcor, right, the wish dragon in it, he looks an awful lot like Drogo did in the second last episode of Game of Thrones. he looked just as believable. Sorry, the second last episode of Game of Thrones, that CGI really bothered me.
In fairness, it's a scene of somebody riding a dragon. Yeah. The CGI, you could have them on a broomstick, and it would have with a dinosaur or a dragon head, and it would get the same effect.
Yeah, well, but he looked so good in the last episode. So,
and, well,
speaking of shoddily CG dinosaurs,
I'll come back. But to wait, that. There's more
later.
So, the other films are Willy Wonka. Who doesn't love Willy Wonka?
Now, that's a film that could give a kid nightmares. The tunnel sequence. Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, there's a bad trip for you.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Jason's favorite film of the last 25 years.
Really?
Jason loves Who Frames Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. I know. He has a sense of humor. Who knew?
Yeah. Every time you think he got him figured out, it's just like there's a warm heart of, like, you know, just...
this isn't fair. He's not even here to defend himself.
Why do you need to defend yourself if you love Roger Rabbit?
That was a positive comment. I don't understand why you need
to defend
himself.
To defend himself from my scurrilous suggestions. Hi, Jay.
Hello.
Back to the Future, which is one of my perennial favourites, and I think I've watched that film over 100 times.
He's not kidding.
No, I'm not, no. The Karate Kid. The original one, not the remake.
What about parts 2 and 3?
If you want my view of the remake, I would suggest checking out the website. It's on there. It's not positive. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Ah, one of my favourites.
Not entirely sure I want my young children to see that.
Yeah. Daddy will leave you. As soon as aliens show up, you're on your own, kids.
As soon as he starts messing around with the potato whip, you're in trouble, kids. Yes.
Then, the 3 Indiana Joneses, because the last one doesn't exist. So Raiders, Temple of Doom, and Last Crusade, and then an Indiana Jones trilogy marathon.
Wow.
So back for the hardcore among us.
Yep, so these are all happening between July and August. So it starts on the 8th of July and runs until the 30th of August. So then, The Goonies. Yeah, I love The Goonies. And then Stand By Me.
That's the book club, isn't it?
Yep, the book club. Stand By Me's book club, and so is Willy Wonka. I have every single one of these on DVD. Or Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's still an excuse to go out.
Yeah, no, I'm still going to go out.
We'll see what the missus has to say about that.
She likes quite a few of these, so we'll see.
I don't think they have parent and baby screenings.
No, but you can have babysitters.
I was also imagining that you were raising like a very cinema conscious child.
Yeah, well, he is only 7 weeks old, so
give it time.
So these are films that I want my kids to see. Is it?
Apparently so.
There isn't one Hanukkah, not one Kiarostami, and not one Kieślowski. I'm disappointed.
Because I really want my children to see The White Ribbon.
Yes! Yes, exactly! You get where I'm coming from.
I don't know. Kurosawa, yes, and Ghibli. Okay, but...
Hanukkah is my homeboy.
Yeah, I was designing little outfits for my son recently, and one of them that Philip asked me to do was Hanukkah is my homeboy as a t-shirt.
I claim copyright on this.
Yeah, so I did not buy that one.
You missed a trick.
I did miss a trick.
Although I did like the one where he says my output is better than Michael Bay's.
Yeah. Oh. Because it's true.
It is. I still like The Rock.
Everybody does, and it's about the only one you can get away with.
I actually like The Island.
Yeah, it's actually not bad.
I never saw The Island, and neither did a lot of people.
Yeah, which is probably why we're in the Michael Bay situation that we're in now.
It's very much a...
It's competent.
It's very much a modern-day Blade Runner, but...
Okay. The
plot was
In terms of plot, not in terms of lasting legacy or anything like that. No, but
It's very like a that sort of Twilight Zone feel to it. So like it's science fiction anthology. Like if you had a masterpiece theater and you gave Michael Bay an episode to direct, it would look like that.
Yeah, it's our Prisoner episode. It's that kind of idea.
For a second there, I was afraid you were actually going to make a very active Blade Runner and The Island comparison besides the plot. And all I can say to that is, time to die.
No. One has Jenny Gutter and the other one doesn't, so therefore the one with Jenny Gutter wins. No, sorry, not Blade Runner. Logan's Run. It has a big Logan's Run thing to it. Logan's Run was what was running in my head.
They were trying to remake Logan's Run with Ryan Gosling and Nicholas Winding Refn for a long time. I think that fell through in the end, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And much to Jay's chagrin, because he was really looking forward to that one.
Anyway, let's carry on.
Sorry, it was Logan's Run that I was thinking of along that place.
Oh, really?
It's the same. The people living in sort of a blissful society, unaware of what's actually going on.
Yeah, and they all have new numbers as well. And hence The Prisoner as well, because it's also numbers.
These are the connections.
I know is I agree with you about Jenny Cutter.
Yes. Anywho, so moving on while we're on the family mode, the IFI is having a family festival July 16th to 19th. So they're going to be showing a preview of Pixar's new film Inside Out.
Nice.
Do we have to have a family to go to this? It's just, I really want to see that.
I wouldn't think so. No.
Yay!
Because you have to, all tickets are family, are €5, about €15 for family tickets. Okay. So you can buy individual ones. So.
Yeah, because I was actually thinking that'd be a really, really fun undercover sort of sneak into Inside Out thing to do.
Oh dear.
No? Okay, fine.
Right.
What else have they got?
They also have, they're also showing The Legend of Longwood, which is an Irish feature. Then Roald Dahl's S.E.O. Trot as well, and a number of other ones. Fiddlesticks, The Outlaw, Lee Crow's Egg. They're showing Puffin Rock, which is the animation. It's an Irish animation. And so, and then they're showing shorts as well. So.
Cool.
Yep.
That's July 16th to 19th.
Yep, and there's going to be workshops as well for kids too. So everything on all the details are on the IFI site. They're also on Scanon as well, and everything has an age range to it, so whether it's what it's suitable for. So.
What about 7-week-olds?
No, I don't think so. Although I was talking to them in the IFI and they were like, he'll be attending the film family festival in no time, or Horrorton, they grow up so fast, is what.
Roll on October.
Yeah. So then, some more films have been announced for The Fly. So we already had My Name's Emily and Euroglee 2, and so we've got Shem the Penman has been announced for their...
Shem the Penman? That's a bit of a tongue...
Shem the Penman Sings Again is what the full name of the film is. So it's basically it's inspired by Joyce, and so the reason that it was announced was... because of Bloomsday being during the week, they announced that this was going to be playing at Galway.
There's something to rejoice about.
Hey!
He's on form, as always.
So it's an experimental film about the making of Finnegan's Wake. And so a number of people play James Joyce in it. So.
Wow. Yeah. So like I'm Not There, but with Joyce.
There you go. That's a good comparison. I like that. I like I'm Not There, too, actually.
Great film.
So that, and then there's been a large number of shorts that none of them have been announced, but all of the short filmmakers have been announcing themselves that they're going to be shown there. So it's most interesting. I'm doing a compilation of them. I'm getting all of them together, and I'll be putting them up on Garskin.
You've probably produced a couple.
Shortly, I've produced one. So
it's a short list.
Yeah, which we one of the early podcasts we had Cathal Black in to talk about his ideas for making Butterfly, and Butterfly is the film that's going to be shown in Galway. So yeah, and I'm the associate producer on that. So.
Cool.
Yep. So that's The Fla is on from July 7th. So this
to Galway with you all.
Yeah, I'm expecting many more announcements in the upcoming days. And next week they'll announce the entire slate of what's on when. So there should be about 20 Irish films in it.
Cool.
Yeah. I bet you didn't think there was 20 Irish films this week.
Oh, now wouldn't be like us to be that cynical, would it?
No. So, speaking of Irish films, there's a number of Irish film festivals that have announced that they're looking for submissions, or that the submission deadlines are coming up. So, the end of this month, June 30th, is the submission deadline for the Fingal Film Festival. It's also the submission deadline for the Cork Film Festival, and submissions have opened for Sky Road as well.
Cool. So Fingal Film Festival, good fans of the other side.
Yep. Well, one of our writers is one works for the festival, and I've been to it, and I presented an award at last year. So. Mm.
As a small film festival, I mean, how I don't know. I just always wondered how film festivals find their genesis and how they go from there. Like, how many years has Fingal been?
This will be the sixth.
And improving year on year, I'm sure.
I would imagine so. You have that thing, Sky Road, this is its second year. So last year was its first year, so it's on in Clifton. But they're dotted all around. But the biggest problem that I have with them, because I go to a number of them, is that they tend to be on the same time.
Yes, summer is popular.
No, September, October is very popular.
That's true. Yeah. A lot of film festivals that time.
Yeah, so like Cork will be on, IndyCork will be on, and Sky Road, and...
Summer would be a good time. I know people don't necessarily want to be indoors to watch films, but if the films are good enough, they will come.
If you screen them, they will come.
Exactly. Thank you, Kevin Costner.
The Underground Cinema Film Festival is also looking for submissions as well. So there are quite a few. All of this is up on Scannon and Garscannon at the moment. So we move into the top 10.
Oh boy.
We start at 10.
Really?
Unconventionally.
Yeah. With Avengers, Age of Ultron.
It's still there.
It is still there. It won't be after this week, but maybe. There's nothing really big opening, so...
It's hard to call.
Because Tomorrowland could fall out and Avengers stay in, you know?
I suspect that you might see Tomorrowland go. And...
Really? Who saw that coming?
I have the poster.
Tomorrowland?
Yep.
Ooh.
It's a very pretty film. Very pretty poster.
Avengers... is there with a weekend gross of €8,059.
Yeah, so that...
This top 10 is going to be fairly dominated by one film in particular.
A little top-heavy.
Yeah, just a touch.
But the second movie didn't do too badly. You know,
the second one also broke six figures. Well, okay.
That's six figures
including the death. Yeah. Okay, fine.
Yes, that's Tomorrowland, the world beyond. But look, that was a 71%.
No, second from the other end.
Yeah,
second from the top.
Oh, right.
As is conventional when you say numbers.
We started at 10. I was following the logic.
Yes. But also, if you put the decimal place in the right place, I guess Tomorrowland does have six digits, making them all winners in a way.
on the basis that Disney's going to post €100 million dollar loss on Tomorrowland, they might want to move the decimal place.
Just a little bit. This is the bit where you remark that this is the reason we're not getting Tron 2, so it's not all bad, or Tron 3. Yeah. Although I liked Tron Legacy.
One of the great things about Tron Legacy was the soundtrack.
The Daft Punk was amazing.
I need more Daft Punk in my life. So
more Daft Punk, more Michael Sheen, and more Olivia Wilde.
So after that,
I can take it or
leave. Yeah.
Speaking of Daft Punk, Eden will be coming soon.
Woo!
Yeah.
Good film.
It is. So Avengers is hanging on there. It's past the 3 million mark, so that's quite impressive.
Hmm.
It will be in the top 10 of the year, not surprisingly.
Well, given the year that's in it, it's quite...
Yeah, that's 8 weeks in the charts. So, yeah. Tomorrowland, on the other hand, 4 weeks in the charts, and it's made 338,000.
Falling quickly.
For that type of film, for what the marketing budget would have been for it as well.
Disastrous.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
But Disney, I mean, those are two Disney properties, so I'd say it balances out fairly well.
Yeah, and Star Wars is coming.
Forgot about
it. Well, it's not as if Ant-Man's going to flop.
Or Inside Out.
You can write off Tomorrowland.
Which is a shame, because those ones that are produced by Disney Studios themselves, like by Buena Vista, aren't doing as well as all of the sort of franchise properties that they have. You know, like
Pixar, Marvel, yeah. Lucasfilm,
even Disney Animation. You know.
Mm. Yeah. Oh well. Speaking of animation,
yes, at 8 and 13 weeks in the charts, and very close to passing 2 million is Home.
Jay liked this one.
I know, another curveball from Jay. Every week we did. I don't know whether we're despairing or if we're just really surprised that this is still here. 13 weeks in top 10. That's legs.
I think you call it a home run.
Mm. He's made that joke before.
I have. Well, it's 13 weeks. There are only so many.
You've only been here about four of them.
Oh, fine.
Animation also at 7 as 2x2 continues its run, so it has passed a 500,000 mark, and that's great for an Irish animation.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it started off okay. I didn't think it'd quite make that money.
Yeah, we're in the summer season.
Yeah, so. It's true. Yeah. True, and I should be here probably next week.
Family friendly, and
yep. Yeah.
So it's staying afloat.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's a film about Noah. Oh dear.
Sorry.
Well, it didn't make biblical money, though.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
That said, I suspect they had no idea it was going to do so well. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. At 6, Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, thank heaven.
Great to see that hanging on there.
Yeah, it's past the 1.5 million mark now, which is is what you want.
It's staying, staying power. It's really impressive. Like, it's great to see.
Yeah, word of mouth is helping this a lot, and it had a higher screen average than the film ahead of it, because it's only in 41 locations now. The rest are in 60 thereabouts. So,
well, that's summer for you. Everything is going to get squeezed out. You know.
Yeah,
I'm just glad this is hanging on 5 weeks later.
Yeah, and they have greenlit a sequel, haven't they? Did I hear?
He has ideas for them. Anyway.
Okay, it's no longer Furiosa, though, I believe.
Really. Great character, it'd be a pity to lose him.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I like the idea that sort of like, if you're going with Mad Max, the idea is that he wanders through the wasteland and randomly bumps into people, rather than he just hangs out with the same people over and over again.
Yeah. I say that him and her go on adventures.
I really want him to continue through desert and meet Daniel Plainview and see what
Daniel Plainview versus Furiosa. I want to see that fight. Her with the bionic arm, him with the bowling skittle. Water! Drainage! Water! Drainage!
Or comes across Priscilla. Either.
there's your Australian cinema crossover waiting to happen. There's your Australia shared universe, really. Forget Avengers.
Mad Max ends up wandering into the Wake and Fright encampment as well.
I mean, the possibilities
fit right in.
The possibilities just present themselves.
I think that'll just be the end of the franchise, because he just find kindred spirits and just get drunk and hunt kangaroos all the time.
as long as he ends up meeting the in-betweeners as well while he's going through the Australian outback.
Move on.
Yep. At 5, also 5 weeks in the charts, and pretty much neck and neck with Mad Max, as it has been since day one, is Pitch Perfect 2.
That's perfect symbiosis of programming. You've got Pitch Perfect 2 for the ladies and Mad Max Fury Road for the guys. But both perfectly enjoyable for anybody.
Both
really.
Strong,
and both strong feminist films, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Which is great to see. More on that later.
The fact that we're going to say a lot in Jurassic World, aren't we?
There's some other ones before that have terrifying feminine female characters as well.
Oh, don't get me started on that, but let's move on.
At 4, Insidious Chapter 3. So this is a horror in the summer.
In the middle of summer, yeah.
I mean, it's following
it's the only one, so, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's great that it's sometime other than the start of the year when there's a dumping ground for everything and October.
I mean, might as well. It's got the market to itself, and it's done already. It's hanging
on.
Rewards.
Yeah. Was it? I don't think it ever. It didn't top the charts, but it's been consistently there. Well, consistently, it's been there for 2 weeks.
It'll be there for at least one more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has. It has an inbuilt audience, being the third chapter in the series, but I...
And again, a bit of word of mouth, in the fact that it is supposed to be better than the last one.
That wouldn't be hard.
And counter-programming as well, exactly. Summer counter-programming.
And then three, San Andreas.
Oh, there's those stereotypes.
Yeah, speaking of the poor feminine characters.
Yes, and the award for biggest waste of Kylie Minogue in a film goes to...
Ooh, wow.
Not Street Fighter.
No, not Street Fighter.
And not Holy Motors.
certainly not. But the fun you and I had punning on this afterwards on Twitter.
That probably says something about the quality of the film itself, to be fair.
We caused quite a low commotion.
Oh, I like it. God. Yeah, sorry, there were so many, I was just spinning around.
Please. I've spent ages there trying to come up with puns, just couldn't get them out of my head.
Otherwise, I'm going to send a pair of you to where the wild roses grow. And
oh, I like it.
Oh dear.
Yeah, no. San Andreas.
We'll do it. Especially for you.
San Andreas. One of the films that I rewatched and I completely forgot about, even though I only rewatched it last night.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Was The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh dear. Yeah, no wonder you forgot it.
So San Andreas is very much in that vein.
Well, they're both equally terrible. No, San Andreas is a little worse.
CGI is very good in The Day After Tomorrow.
Good, because it's terrible in San Andreas.
But I also think even the structuring of San Andreas as a disaster film is not ideal. Like, I think that if you're doing a disaster film, you can't do a star vehicle at the same time, because...
Let's set a guy who is... You're going to set him up as a hero, and then he abandons
his city to save
a family.
Who are just conveniently in the middle of all the chaos.
In a vehicle that could be used to rescue dozens, if not hundreds, of citizens in the immediate vicinity.
Yeah, so...
I do love that nobody seems to question. Like he just took the helicopter, and no, everybody's like, "You want to ask him about that?" And no.
He's the Rock.
Do you want to argue with that?
Yeah. I also love the idea of casting the Rock as an everyman.
You see that's not the least believable aspect of this film, but funnily enough,
no, and I love the Rock, but it's very hard to believe the Rock as sort of a divorced sort of father who works in who flies a helicopter for a
minute. Can't stop the Rock.
Yeah,
can't stop the rock. Oh dear.
Yeah, no.
We're between a rock and a hard place when it comes to these.
Yes, indeed.
At two, Spy.
Really enjoyed Spy.
Yes, we talked about it before how much we've enjoyed it, but I don't care because it is very enjoyable for all its problems.
The probably both of you's best film.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Which is good.
Because the other two are quite good.
And with Ghostbusters, his reboot starting shooting this week, all eyes are going to be on that now.
With Emma Stone turning it apart.
Yes, indeed.
I just love who they've gotten as the receptionist.
Yeah, that's pretty great
that
casting.
I mean, Thor by the desk.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see that?
I'm actually quite impressed with sort of Chris Hemsworth's counter-programming that's going on at the moment, because he's in that Vacation as well, isn't he?
Oh. He is. Yeah. There's a lot of people
there. We
that.
Go. Yeah, that's
dreadful.
That's happening.
Have you seen the poster for it? The poster for it has the family in
a raw sewage pump.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because the trailer also has them in a raw sewage pump.
I'm
just surprised that they got Chevy Chase back and, he wouldn't do Community.
Well, I think the problem with the Community was that they weren't bowing to what he wanted them, so. Anyway, Spy is... Spy is worth watching.
I Spy a winner.
Then, at number one, with the biggest opening of the year to date...
And it's unlikely to be beaten.
Crossing a million in his opening weekend, which is an incredible feat.
Go on, Star Wars. Let's see you match that.
Oh, it will. And then some. It's Jurassic World.
Okay.
Now that you've seen it.
Right, now that I've seen it. Darren, you talked about this last week before it went on release.
Darren was sitting beside me.
This is abysmal. This is absolutely horrible. I mean, Jurassic is the right word. Everything about it is. The CG is old hat. The gender politics are, 50 years... if not more, out of date. There is nothing, and I've talked back about it, nothing that redeems it in any way for me. There's nothing special about this at all.
What about the scene where, they're wondering where the dinosaur's gone, and they've got all the computers, and then Chris Pratt stares at the window, and he goes, "There it is."
That's just stupid.
The entire film would not have happened had she rang the control center and said, "Where is the Indominus Rex?"
On that tracking system that we...
Before they sent tree guys into the cage.
Yeah, before they open the gate to the cage, you should probably check the GPS to see where it is.
All I've said is a few lines, and I've set you off pointing out all the flaws. We'll be here all night. And how can anybody run in those heels?
I love that there's a close-up of the heels, as if to prove that she's still wearing them.
Oh, what's in the heels? Titanium?
Yeah. But just in case you thought that they were cheating, or at some stage she'd taken them off. During the final sequence, there's a shot of her legs, just so you can see. No, she's still wearing those heels.
Now, in the first film, in Jurassic Park, they had a problem outrunning the T-Rex in a Jeep. In Jurassic World, she outruns them in heels!
But to be fair, it is the same T-Rex, right? So it's, 20 years older? I mean, what's the life expectancy of a T-Rex?
Well, the problem is that the life expectancy of any animal in captivity is higher than it is out of captivity. Right. So you have to know how long the T-Rex has been in captivity.
Okay, I feel like we need a blackboard for this. Yeah. It's old. It's probably a little flabby, you know.
Much like the film, really. This is... Yeah, I don't care. I hate it that much. I decided I have to not care, or else it'll make me too angry.
Now, see, I did the review, and I enjoyed the film despite the numerous problems. And I mean, it has some serious problems. But it, as a sort of roller coaster type summer film,
it's a lot better in the moment than it is out.
Exactly. The further you get away from it, the worse it gets.
Well, that's exactly it.
The opposite of a T-Rex.
In the very very nicely observed there, young sir. But I could not allow myself to enjoy it. Such was its thundering stupidity. And besides factual errors, it just... All the time, it is beating you over the head with the nostalgia stick. Oh, look, here's everything you remember from Jurassic Park. Almost to serve as a reminder that we're not as good as it.
Yeah, but also, on the other hand, there's the self-awareness stick as well. So you get that kind of mixed in, you know?
It's a meta-commentary on the attempt to make a blockbuster in this modern age.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Like the Indominus Rex is very much a metaphor for the film itself.
I'm sorry, but I think you're giving the film more intelligence than it deserves.
No, but I mean, and the thing about the movie is that I could get that itself, but the fact that the whole point of the film is that the Indominus Rex is terrible, just a terrible idea. Like, I don't want to sit in a darkened room and spend 2 hours telling me it's stupid.
Making a film based around a terrible idea doesn't change the fact that it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a terrible idea. You can make a good film from a terrible idea. You can make a bad film from a great idea.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. But
it's not what the story is about.
The fact that this park is based around a terrible idea is a good idea. But unfortunately, the film is so weighed down by not uninteresting characters, iffy CGI... those gender issues I was mentioning. No stereotypes there at all.
Pratt is a better mother than Bryce Dallas Howard, and dozens of people die because of that fact.
Yes.
Only love it's known is from that crane.
The
only relationship it's had is with that crane.
Oh, good point. That's a very different film.
That sounds racist.
That's a very different film.
But that's what he says. The only relationship.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And the idea that you can train raptors. Yes, let's give the dinosaurs more wonder by robbing them of their threat.
No. Making them humanizing them.
No, the thing is that you can't train raptors. You can find an equilibrium in which they will respond to certain base commands. But they're not in any way trained or tame or...
Without spoiling the film, the climax kind of hinges on that.
The climax hinges on big CGI blob hitting big CGI blob until I don't care.
But in big CGI blobs hitting other big CGI blobs, it's better than Godzilla.
No, I prefer the effects in Godzilla.
If you edited out Aaron Taylor Johnson, I think Godzilla would be a better film.
Agree.
No, but nobody wins. It's like Alien versus Predator. Whoever wins in that fight, we lose.
Thinking back on Godzilla, having seen Jurassic World, it looks a little better. And I really, really hated Jurassic World. I can't stress that enough.
Here's the thing, right? I enjoyed Jurassic World and found lots of problems with it. All right, so, and further away from it, I don't like it as much, right? But Pacific Rim, I didn't enjoy it while I was watching it, but when I rewatched it, I did enjoy it.
Yeah, no, like, I'd say Pacific Rim is a great example of a stupid, stupid film that is great fun. There is no accounting for logic in Pacific Rim that makes it make anything resembling sense. But I think it's enjoyable both in the moment and, like, after the moment, like, in a way that Jurassic World isn't.
Funny, I saw it and all I could think was, this is the most neutered example of Guillermo del Toro's imagination I've ever seen. And I saw Mimic. It's just, no. Actually, no. Mimic has a bit more imagination than Pacific Rim. I'll give it that.
Anyway, Jurassic World has made bonkers amounts of money, right?
Yeah.
So the appetite for that type of film is definitely there.
Yeah.
You know?
Nostalgia fest. Not that we... Yeah.
It's not about the... It's about the fact that it's a sequel to Jurassic Park.
Well, it's something you remember from your childhood.
So was Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, and but they came relatively soon after the fact. This has been a 14
but
years away.
So is Mad Max.
But Tron was a Legacy was a remake of Tron. And,
yeah, but who really cares about Tron?
Okay, well, so is Mad Max then, and we all love Mad Max.
Yeah, but does anybody love, say, Mad Max as much as Jurassic Park?
Some people do.
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Well, fair.
Are we not trying to find good examples of this?
No, so, I'm trying to counteract the idea that just because the film comes 20 years after one that we really love doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to turn out in droves for it.
Didn't they turn out in droves for the Crystal Skull?
The word just got out fast.
Yeah, no, originally they did, and then it tapered off very quickly.
I remember my heart breaking. Like, I got no forewarning on that. Thanks, people. I got to experience that firsthand.
That's not the most crushed I've been by a film that I went into expecting to be brilliant.
Okay.
Spidey 3.
Oh, you were just asking for trouble.
Because Spidey 2 is so good.
It really is.
And X-Men 3 as well.
Oh, but that had Brett Ratner. Yeah, you should have known better.
I had some warning there, but still.
Yeah.
But no, like, I mean, nostalgia is, you know, it's the currency. It's probably always been the currency, but it's particularly pronounced now when you have these things where you can resurrect properties from 20 years
basically,
ago.
Basically, you're all easily susceptible to the warped memories of your own childhoods, and shame on you all.
Actually, I would say that, they deserve to be judged on their own merits. Like, I'd say, if you're talking about, like, Hannibal on television is, for example, an example of this. It's taking something, not from their childhood, but it's taking something people remember from 20 years ago and reworking it in a way that is interesting and that is clever and that is beautiful. And is, you know,
I've only seen the first season, but I'm not seeing a lot of the interesting and the clever in it. I'm seeing a lot of the very, very stylish, but yeah.
I would argue that the second season finale last year is the best hour of television that I saw that year.
I will watch the second season, because I've heard it does take a big leap in quality.
It does. But no, so I think, and a Mad Max Fury Road is another example. Like, the only reason that got greenlit is because people know the name Mad Max. And you end up with a great film out of it. Like, I think that as terrible as it is to talk about sequels and, like, trading on nostalgia and the cynicism of it, I think that sometimes it does work.
Yes, I mean, I suppose people figured it went... The people who knew Mad Max and the films that came before, they're probably going in thinking, well, it can't be much worse than Thunderdome.
Yeah.
No Tina Turner in this one, but hey, we got
Tina Turner was not the biggest problem with Thunderdome.
No, she was
the bit where he goes to Never Neverland, the Peter Pan crossover.
It's a bit silly.
It is, but I mean, all the Mad Max films are a bit silly. Lord Humongous.
Oh yeah, because everybody loves Jason Voorhees crossed with a gimp. But anyway, that's for another time.
Wow. Okay, we'll move on to what's out this week.
Yeah, we went a long way off track there, didn't we?
Yeah. So, this week, big release is Entourage.
Which we've
both seen.
I did not, no.
First of all, who's a fan of Entourage and who isn't?
I watched it, I thought it was fine, but the last couple of seasons aren't.
Yeah, they really jumped the shark.
I had never seen an episode of Entourage. I was aware of Jeremy Piven because he was nominated for 4 Emmys and won 3. So that was my awareness of it.
Yeah,
he's
fantastic.
He's the best thing about it.
I have some questions as a non-fan, but we'll get to that after you talk about it. Like,
this is going to be good because, you know, you're coming at it from different...
Okay, well, as the noob, do you want to go first?
Okay, I thought it was grand. I thought it wasn't great. It wasn't brilliant. It was very much a reunion in terms of... I suspect that part of the reason it was made was because these people wanted to hang out together rather than somebody saw the potential for you know, massive, massive box office. Because I remember hearing it had been in development hell for God knows how long, right?
Because it's 4 years. Since the show ended.
Yeah, 4 years since the show ended. And there's never a sense watching it that this is a story that needed to be told. Like, I didn't get a sense that this was wrapping up anything from the show that needed to be wrapped up. Mm. I got the sense it was just people like these characters, these actors like hanging out together. And Jeremy Piven won some Emmys, so let's do that. Like Sex and the City, but for guys, pretty much. You know, so the next Entourage movie, they're probably going to Dubai.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than Sex and the City 2, could it? Could it?
Find out next year. No, I thought it was grand. It could have been a lot worse. I was a lot more cynical going into it. As far as sort of like belated removed movies based on television shows go, it's better than the second X-Files movie, which is a very low bar to clear. But no, I mean, yeah, what surprised me, no tension. Absolutely no tension. No suspense. And because Ari Gold, right? So explain the concept of Ari Gold, who is the Jeremy Piven character, who's the agent. Or he was the agent. He's now involved in the studio system.
The studio head, yep.
My understanding, based on like secondhand conversations and Emmy clips and like the affection the character has, was that he was sort of meant to be your stereotypical like bitey Hollywood, you know, sort of snappy, angry, anger management sort of thing.
Very angry.
Yeah. So it surprised me watching the film. Did he always have his heart so much on his sleeve? Like yeah, there's always to a certain extent.
Yeah. He hid it a bit better in the show, but there were definitely times when it came out to play.
Because it felt like watching the film, there were lots of points where you could have had more tension, you could have had more drama, but instead
we just got more Johnny drama.
Yeah. But instead, you know, it turns out, hey, he likes these four guys and they're best buds and they're gonna hang out together.
He loves Vince. Vince is basically his guy.
Because
the Mentos
loyalty thing, yes, the Mentos thing. Oh, we got to see the Mentos thing. That was hilarious. I'll give it that. What are your questions? That was
my main question. Was it always that toothless?
To a certain extent, yes. In fact, not to a certain extent, yes, definitely.
Because I mean, without spoiling anything, the plot of the film is basically
Vince wants to become a director.
Yeah, and he's given the job by Ari, who trusts him. He directs the film, he stars in the film, and then the financial backers get sort of nervous about it, played by Billy Bob Thornton and Haley Joel Osment, which is great. I love Haley Joel Osment. But basically the central conflict of the film becomes Ari Gold standing up for Vince's artistic vision against like the cynicism and manipulations
of
redneck Texans.
I just feel like this was probably hastily rewritten after American Sniper did so well. Don't know why. Okay, to answer your question, as far as conflict goes, the show comprised of 22-minute episodes that wrapped up most of their issues by the end. Okay. It just had like one through line for every season. Like Vince is doing a particular movie or something along those lines.
He is fighting with Sloan.
Oh, they never stopped. They never stopped. And they're back in this and they practically never stop, even though she's about to have his kid. Oh, they really morph E into a duplicitous little shit in this one. Especially so.
But it is very much it seems like somebody wrote a movie about lad culture without any experience of lad culture. Like a sort of like an anthropological
study. It's lad culture
study to
the extreme.
Yeah, based on what somebody read in a book about lad culture.
Yeah. To put it in the context of the show, certainly the first number of seasons, there's certainly more than a fair share of rather sexist and even lapsing into misogynist viewpoints and that kind of dumb laddie behaviour, but it framed it within the context of a Hollywood system that seemed to breed it, so it became an interesting little commentary. I thought the show certainly in its first few seasons was a bit smarter than people gave it credit for, but then as time went on it just got a bit more, what is the technical term, yes, up itself, and just became more vain, more sexist, and not
face
value. Good.
Well, all the female characters exist pretty much as props for the male characters.
They are tits on sticks.
Yeah, they're shuffled off screen as soon as they've served the purpose of making a male character feel a particular way.
Yes, horny, basically.
Well, yeah.
And in one scene, E only feels that way because drama laces water bottle with Viagra. But
oh,
hey,
those playful glutes. That's a true friend.
Yes,
it is.
Basically, their behavior hasn't changed. The way I think of the film, like you say, you don't think it had any particular conflicts to resolve. The last episode of the last season tied things up so neatly, you could have used its negative as sutures. And this is just basically existing for the sake of a theatrical run and getting a bit more money out of us. And Warner's probably a bit disappointed with its performance, even though it will end up making a profit eventually.
Well, I thought that it only cost $30 million.
Right? Yeah, it's only grossed 32 so far.
Yeah, but I mean, it'll have a great life on video.
It will doubtlessly do well on DVD sales come Christmas. But, yeah. That is its main reason for existing. The characters, people do seem to like them. We love Ari, and to a certain extent, we like Johnny Drama.
Yeah.
They're the most interesting.
They're the only two who actually seem like characters.
Adrien Grenier as Vince, he never could act, and I think that was part of its meta-ness, that they were training him as this great actor when, in fact, he can't act. But that sounds overly harsh, but let's face it, it is fair. I don't mind Jerry Farrar, I don't mind Kevin Connolly, but Kevin Dillon and Jeremy Piven, they walk away with every scene they're in.
Yeah.
And the film lets them have free reign. Theirs are probably the most developed storylines in the whole thing.
Yes, even though like there's a late movie development featuring drama, which is a big deal for like 5 minutes and then completely forgotten about.
Yeah, because, you know, certain things get in the way of certain other things, but those certain things can
need
be worked
to be
out
up.
By...
Yeah,
yeah,
need to be wrapped up.
It's, yeah, like you say, tension is not this film's thing. It hops from bare bones plot to bare bones plot, occasionally cracking some great one-liners and getting as much value as they can out of some surprisingly big cameos, although those are balanced out with no-name cameos nobody wants.
Well, actually, here's the thing about the cameos, right? Because I'm not going to spoil any, but I mean, just watching...
Well,
the...
don't bother, the trailer lists them all.
Yeah, just gives them a long list. But I mean, I was surprised at the age of most of the cameos. Like, the target market for the film seems to be, like, people in their 30s or 40s. Like, most of the cameos come from people who, like, my parents would recognize, sort of thing. In that, like, you get two cast members of Married with Children. Which two? Find out next week. And you're like, is this still relevant? You know, is this, like, is that what the market is?
Well,
is that the people
granted, one of those cast members... who am I referring to? Let's see. One of those cast members does have another TV show since.
Yes.
And the other one was already in Entourage, TV show. So there's kind of a precedent, but at the same time, sometimes they're really reaching. And some of them just come the hell out of nowhere. I don't want to say which particular multi-billionaire suddenly appears in it for no good reason. Why is he in a movie set? I have no idea, but he's there.
They probably had a nice buffet at that
time. Probably.
Buffet, if you will.
Jesus Christ. What the hell was he doing? That makes no sense at all.
That's best not to question these things.
Why didn't they ask him for the finishing money for Vince's movie? Why ask Billy Bob Thornton?
Plot hole, people. Plot hole.
Well, no, not really.
But I actually...
if you know the investing portfolio, particularly, yeah. No.
All they needed was $15 million. He probably has
just
that
like
in
his
pocket.
Yeah, in his pocket.
Surely Turtle has that. He's a multimillionaire.
Yeah, well, actually, in fairness, that spoiler alert, possibly. But yeah.
And also, speaking of Turtle, he has the weakest plot line of all of them, by far.
Ronda Rousey.
Yes. Who? I didn't know who she was before I saw this thing.
You missed out on the wonder that is the Expendables 3.
Thank goodness.
Is it better or worse than the first Expendables? Because I think the Expendables 2 is like the underrated masterpiece of the trilogy, as far as that those terms can be applied to that film trilogy.
3 has got some of the best, worst lines in the world.
Yes, like, what about The Hague? I am The Hague.
Yeah. It's not quite My Face Is My ID from Transformers, but still. You know.
We have a saying about messing with people from Texas, he says in his Boston accent.
Entourage, basically, not quite as bad as you've heard, but nowhere really good enough to justify its own existence. A few laughs, undeniably, and as far as accusations of its sexism goes, it's no worse than Jurassic World.
Yeah, it won't be the worst film in the top 10 next week.
No, because the worst film in the top 10 at the moment is going to be there a while.
Yes.
I think that's unfair towards Jurassic World. Anyway.
It's unfair towards San Andreas, really.
One of the possibly worst films in the top 10 next week is The Longest Ride.
I'm going to make that noise anytime anyone ever mentions that title, because it deserves it.
Once you've seen one Nicholas Sparks adaptation, you have seen all.
Except he's not cupping her face on the poster. Wow. She's only holding his hat or something.
And in the trailer, he is not waxing or sanding a boat.
But is he a former military man?
Is he wearing a Czech shirt?
He wears a Czech shirt because he rides a bull at one point. So
is there an elderly relative with an estate where they can, you know, spend time together?
It's pretty much formulaic, these things. He's a formula rodeo rider who falls in love with an artist.
I don't know. So, yeah, I still think
rough and tumble guy, arty girl. What could possibly happen? You know, it's just
what could possibly go right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is not something that I will be rushing out to see.
Oh, no, it doesn't seem like there were a lot of creative spark there.
No.
No. It does star Clint Eastwood's son. Oh my God, he looks just like him. That is really, really weird. and Alan Alda's in it.
Yeah, no.
Oh, there we go. Does he own an estate where they can spend time together?
Probably. I have no idea.
Anyway, on to one that I probably will go see. Mr. Holmes.
I quite liked it.
Yeah, so...
I'm the only one who's seen it. I quite liked it. Very charming, very light. It's Bill Condon and Ian McKellen reteaming for the first time since Gods and Monsters.
Yeah.
So it has that sort of feel to it, a meditation on sort of growing old for, you know, a pop cultural icon, except this one happens to be fictional. And it's basically set in the context of Sherlock Holmes' later years, jumping back and forth through time, through three time periods. The first time period is Holmes' last case.
Time cop with Sherlock Holmes.
It is. And tell me that doesn't make you excited.
Only if Jean-Claude Van Damme is playing Holmes.
Elementary. But yes, so it jumps between his last case, a recent visit to Japan in the wake of the Second World War, and his current impaired state as he's dealing with his senility. And basically, it's structured around Holmes trying to solve the greatest mystery of all, the human condition.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
It is. And I mean, it's something that's very easy to be cynical about, because you've got, and I love that there's this cultural fascination with Holmes as a character rather than simply a vehicle which can be used to tell mystery stories. So there is no mystery at the heart of Mr. Holmes in terms of there's no...
Is this a good curveball or a bad one? I don't know the fact that there is no mystery in a Sherlock Holmes film.
Well, it's exactly what you're expecting based on most modern adaptations of Holmes. I mean, even if you look at, say, House or Sherlock or stuff like that, or even Elementary, the mystery is very much secondary to the character study of a dysfunctional human being with unhealthy relationships.
Is there a point where Ian McKellen goes, "Oh, if only I wasn't cooked off my tits the whole time"?
Alas, no. But there is an incident where he tries to brew his own special medicine, and it goes horribly wrong.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I might have to see this.
But no, it's great. McKellen's fantastic in it.
Shock, horror.
Yeah, I know. Ian McKellen, good actor, ? you decide. It's a fantastic performance. The movie around it is, you know, it's something that's very easy to be cynical about, but I think it works enough that it's entertaining and it's light. It runs for about 2 hours. It doesn't overstay its welcome. There's some weird imagery where I'm not entirely sure what the movie's saying. So you have this...
if you're not sure, I imagine the movie isn't either.
But the film jumps between... Like, it jumps between the end of the First World War and the end of the Second World War. And he goes to Japan after the Second World War, which puts Sherlock Holmes like in post-World War II Japan. And I think it's meant to be some sort of commentary on the end of Empire. Like the decline of like Japan and British Empire after. Because there's a point where he's talking about he's keeping bees, as seems to be the thing that Sherlock Holmes does in all
detectives,
these...
Detectives, bees, oh God, it's the Wicker Man all over again.
Yep. Hide! Yep. Sadly, we are spared a scene of Ian McKellen shouting, "Not the bees!"
Not the bees.
But yeah, so it's interesting.
Adam, step away from the bike.
Being a Bill Condon film, it's very well made.
You include the last two Twilight films in that, I'm sure.
They're the best Twilight films. They are. I had to actually do a check in my head to be sure that I could back that up. They are the best Twilight films. Damning with faint praise.
Indeed.
Talking about ropey CGI.
Oh. Yeah, but they didn't have the biggest opening weekends of all time. Internationally.
I love your disclaimers.
Yes.
Other new releases this week are old releases, as the case would be. Long on Friday.
Great
film.
Yeah, so it's on the iFi.
Fake CG dinosaurs. Oh, shit. Belle Poskin's best role.
Absolutely probably, fantastic. Yeah.
I think
Roger Abbott.
Yeah.
Where's Jay when you need him? I think I actually still own the faulty DVD, the DVD printing of that, which skips half the film.
Still have it? Why?
I still have it because I can't give it away. I actually like having the DVD too much to part with it for 2 weeks to get it replaced by mail. That's how much I love The Long Good Friday.
Well, you should, because it is fantastic.
It is a fantastic film.
It's the kind of thing that Guy Ritchie couldn't make in 10 lifetimes, no matter how hard he tried.
And it's got Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
And Bob Hoskins. Was it 5'2" and cubic was his description of himself? Which is...
what he lacks in height, he makes up for in menace
just
and
presence.
Attitude.
Yeah. But I think, in fairness, it's not really a Guy Ritchie sort of film in terms of comparison. Like, I think it's not...
It's in the same milieu, and it's
Guy Ritchie film will never be described as being in any milieu.
Hey, I like Lockstock and Snatch.
Yeah, Snatch's okay, but it's no Long Good Friday.
No, it's no Long Good Friday. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
Other films out this week, there are two foreign films. The Burning with Gael Garcia Bernal.
And Alice Braga. Yes. As basically kidnap, rescue, revenge kind of thing. Not getting great word of mouth, though, but it's opening a few places. And Gael Garcia Bernal, he has a fan base, so
yeah,
off you go, ladies.
He's a fabulous actor.
He is, I'll give him that. Especially when... I think he just has a tendency to pick iffy projects. I mean, he's a Mexican actor, and the last film I saw him in, he played an Iranian. Just saying.
Can Noonien sing?
I don't know, can he? Hey!
Oh, yeah, so this is the Indian Sikh who was played by a Mexican, who was then played by a white British man.
The white British man.
But I love the idea that somehow casting a Mexican actor and like browning him up, because he was not, Ricardo Montalban at that time was not that skin color. Is somehow
he might have been once
was somehow less offensive more offensive than casting Benedict Cumberbatch and not changing his skin color.
And then Les Combattants is out as well. So
Les Combattants.
Yep. So you being the French scholar, Philip.
I haven't seen it. If that's what you're going to ask.
Is it something that you would be interested in? Because it played the
director's
Fortnite.
I haven't seen it. I have no idea. Who's in it?
It has Adele Hanel, Kevin Hayes.
Azeas.
Aye, because it's that eye up, that umlaut over the eye.
Azeas.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know, this looks to me like a retread of Aux en Swimming Pool, to be honest. I could be wrong. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard very little about it, I haven't seen it, and I probably won't.
Tomorrow night, IFI, Friday, 19th June,
this
at half eight.
This implies you're going to get this.
So yesterday, or the day before.
No, I will have it out. But don't worry about that, I will have it out tonight, or early tomorrow morning. Is Jodorowsky's Dune.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Yes. So,
not the actual film adaptation of Dune by Alejandro Jodorowsky, but
yes, given that it doesn't exist, yes. That
exactly.
Being a major impediment.
Well, I know.
Have you seen the documentary? Have you?
No, I haven't.
Beautiful.
It's stunning looking.
Yeah. Well, as you imagine that the film itself would have been.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a proposed adaptation of Dune from the man who brought us El Topo and the Holy Mountain. How could it not look stunning?
Yes.
Or at least batshit in the extreme.
You say it as if we don't have an adaptation of Dune that is already batshit in the extreme.
It's also kind of boring, though, isn't it?
It is.
And then Singh turns up in his pants and we're all freaking out because we didn't need that.
Yeah,
it has.
And Singh, take off that ginger wink.
It has Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Matrix suits that looked like, I don't know, it looks like the Michelin Man in the Matrix. Bulky.
I'm surprised that there hasn't been a move to reboot Dune.
Dune went, whatever version, even Lynch, he had to go through a lot to get through Dune. That was a very compromised
hell
film.
Of a book.
It is, it's a fantastic book. I'd argue it's very influential on, say, Game of Thrones.
It's Yeah, not to the same extent the Lord of the Rings.
No, obviously. Yeah, well, they didn't cast Kyle MacLachlan in the first season of Game of Thrones.
I haven't read the book, but I've always found the idea of trying to sell the spice melange as a thing. I don't know, just with a name like that, it sounds like a very fancy blancmange.
Well, it's really not like in the same milieu.
I use one fancy word and you're going to pounce on me on it.
Our French scholar, Phil.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm a French scholar, I'm sorry.
I recommend checking out Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yeah. So.
Because that's what has us in stitches.
Yep, that's what's doing this weekend.
God's sake.
Before we forget, Saturday, IFI opened it.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. I mean, so be there early.
Yeah, we shall report back.
Yes.
No, the other one, Accident and Love, is not actually showing anywhere. So.
Really?
Yes.
But wow. So David O. Russell's critically lambasted project was made 7 years ago.
Not David O. Russell. Wink.
Wink.
But so Emma Stone as a...
Jessica Biel.
I thought Loa, sorry.
That's a Loa. No. Sorry. Accidental Love.
Ah, okay.
That's the one he's been... It was like made years ago and never released because it's horrific.
Jessica Biel suffers an accident with a nail gun and as a result she decides to go to Washington to try and seek better healthcare reform.
Oh, is there a message to this film, Phil?
It's David O. Russell. Anything's possible.
Oh.
Yeah. It's...
Anyway, it's not out, so don't worry about it.
It's not escaped.
Thank heavens, we managed to contain that. So there's more that could be said for the Indominus Rex. I hate that.
So we're all going to see Tusk then on Saturday, right?
It's on DVD already. My father, I'm not giving Kevin Smith the satisfaction.
Nashville.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's a much better note.
We'll leave it there for the week and we'll see you next week.
Cheers. Bye.